This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Oh, special guests, special classes in session. Got to those say hello to Dr. Johnny Lupinacci and Jess. How are you, my two friends?
Doing great, Tim. Doing great. Excited about this special guest. Mm-hmm. I mean, timely moment. And it's always great to hear from our leaders. And so, Tim, let's jump right into it.
Yeah, return a guest. Man, does she need a long, long introduction? My goodness, no. The president of AFT, returning guest, Randy Weingarten. Randy, how are you, our friend?
I am always great when I'm on a Zoom or a interview or just hanging with you, Tim, and you, Johnny, and you, Jess.
Yeah. We love you. And we love the work you're doing because it is not just important work. It's the work. And we're proud of you. And we couldn't be happier to have you with us here, Randy. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so Randy, we are here in, you know, a moment. You gave a great speech. We're going to talk about this. But, you know, how is it that we maybe put the question we've been asking this to a lot of our guests? How do you see this new moment that we're in where we have a president-elect Trump, you know, almost going to be an installed President Trump? He's made open declarations of wanting to go after public education in a way. And where are we going? What do we do? What's Randy Weingarten thinking about this moment and where we're headed?
Well, that's a big question, Tim.
Yeah. Yes,
you know, let's see. Do I have about, I don't know, 10 hours on the couch here?
Right.
But I would say we have to spend a little bit of time understanding what happened. And I do think, and I said this in the speech that I gave in honor of David Dinkins at Columbia, on December 5th. I do think there's the intersecting eyes, incumbency, inflation, immigration, identity. You know, all of those things played a role in an election where right track, wrong track. You know, it was 75% of Americans thought we were on the wrong track, 25% thought we were on the right track, and Harris lost by a point and a half. I mean, so let's just put all of this into perspective in terms of what this was. But I think that the overarching issue I heard over and over again was the price of eggs. And I was on a bus basically from Labor Day to Election Day, crisscrossing the country, talking to people, not only my members, but parents and patients and community members and labor. And so I heard a lot. But I also think, I mean, and look at the reaction. Nothing absolves anyone. I mean, someone should not have been murdered the way in which the chief executive of United Health was. I mean, nothing absolves that criminality. Let me just be really clear. But look at the reaction that has happened since about all of the horrible stories about how United Health handles patients. Look at what happens in terms of the price of eggs. And yet there's this, you know, the price gouging that has happened. And, you know, look, so I think that what you saw is basically just like we've seen in 9 of the 10 last federal elections, where one party or another, or where the White House, the Senate, or the House of Representatives changed hands. What you saw was people saying collectively, this is the only agency I have to get change. What you didn't see, and I'm going to be really clear about this, that the two underlying other ways of creating empowerment and agency, one is elections, the other is education, the third is a labor movement. you didn't see people saying, no, I don't want a labor movement. And you didn't see people saying, no, I don't want public education. In fact, it was the opposite. The three ballot initiatives, statewide ballot initiatives on vouchers all failed. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that I keep lifting up in Nebraska, where in counties where Trump won 95-5, the voucher proposal lost 60-40. And the labor initiatives that were on the ballot, they didn't lose either. So when Trump goes and says he's against public education or he's for vouchers, it's dissonant to where people are. And so this makes all of us, we're going to have to work hard as allies to fight back against the misinformation and the disinformation and the billionaires' push to undermine and defund public education. And they will push it. They'll want their, sorry about the,
that's okay,
the whatever, you know, we are in life.
That's
but,
right.
But they will push to defund public education. They will push for vouchers. And those of us who understand the promise of America and understand the promise of public education as a key ingredient to opportunity for all, we're going to have to ally ourselves more closely than ever before to fight back.
Well, Randy, too, yeah, thank you for making that point. I mean, we did a great interview with rural Kentucky and a person who went down there and saw that same, you know, 74% of the voters voted against vouchers, but 80-20 voted for Trump. So we know there's a message there with public education. And I, you know, I've been framing it this way. Isn't this the opportunity to create a movement where we know people, and you say in these rural places, maybe even pointing out Democrats missed out on the reality of how to use public education as a community organizing point, there we could be galvanized to say this is a movement that we can get behind. You know, in 25 years of supporting high stakes testing and standards, guess what? That's not a winning, winning thing. My neighbor doesn't care about that. My neighbor cares, as they pointed out here in Kentucky, as you said, in Nebraska, they want their public schools and they actually want their public schools funded. And nobody talked about that in the election as something to run on.
Correct. And in fact, I did an op-ed, right, that was hard to frankly place, where I said there were three debates. And not one question about education was advanced in the three debates. So it wasn't just the, Trump and Biden or Trump and Harris. Mm. And I mean, look, Tim Walz is a public school teacher. So to the extent that anybody was talking about it, his pedigree, his identity talked to it. But the media in none of those debates, not any of those debates, did the question of education arise? Mm-hmm. So I think that the issues about and I think to your point, absolutely, public education is an organizing principle. It is a way. It is a bipartisan principle in so many areas across the country, and for the life of me, I do not understand why it was not front. It was not on Front Street.
Johnny.
Yeah, well, Randy, I mean, this is excellent conversation for our listeners. And listeners, we'll link you to a speech that was, I just thought, was just right on point, extremely timely, fighting for a better future, Randy. In that speech, you kind of outline, you know, some suggestions for schools, but you remind us that that we can learn from history and that in this moment that is almost like one of our other guests called a Dickens moment. Yes, we could see it as the worst of times, but it also in many ways is the best of times for our lifetimes. And thinking about how you remind us that support for unions is the highest it's been since 1965, right? And that, you know, what is it? I think you said 90% of Americans under the age of 30 support unions.
Yes.
And then you acknowledge the feeling of loss of agency and the hopelessness that so many working folks across this country, and especially, you noted, especially so many young men out there who have voiced that and swung this election. You're acknowledging these things and reminding us, remember why we have unions, why we have these, and what an exciting time to have a creative and skillful negotiator like you, Randy, you know, helping to kind of say, hey, let's sit down and let's figure out how to strengthen things. Let's address these real needs, especially if we're in a populist moment. So I just wonder, would you speak to that exciting part of where unions are at today?
So I would say, you know, and I did, and I do throw down the gauntlet, but also I think we have to be wise enough to know where the bright lines are. I mean, we want a country. I am very proud to be an American. I love being an American. I am a patriotic American. I believe in America. And part of America is having a democracy where you actually can speak in nonviolent protest and in nonviolent ways your mind. And so will we still have a democracy or not? That's going to be a big question in the next, you know, in the next few years. And I say this in watching in awe what just happened in Syria. Yes, concerned, but watching in awe how quickly that dictatorship fell after 54 years. Mm-hmm. And so, but what creates, so voice is really important, but what the labor movement does is, or what a union does, it's not just voice, it's economic power. And it's not the authoritarian or the strong man bequeathing it to you, saying, oh, don't worry, I'll do it for you. It's us doing it for ourselves. That's what concerted action means. That's what joining together and fighting for a collective bargaining contract, fighting for increased wages, fighting for decent healthcare, whether you're fighting in a policy realm at the State House or the White House, or whether you're fighting in terms of your boss and wanting to have a contract that has that. That's the difference between the strongman and the authoritarian and having the agency from a union that creates a tent to enable people to empower themselves collectively. And frankly, what's happening is that we've had a 40-year fight with billionaires on both sides, Democrat as well as Republican, who has actually not wanted regular folks to have that. And you see it because of the trade agreements that were made. You see communities being hollowed out. You see when wealth gets rewarded, not work, when shareholder value gets rewarded as opposed to sustainable communities. I can go on and on. Mm-hmm. That's that neoliberalism, that trickle-down economics. It didn't work. And what has happened is that people are lonely and they have given up. And a labor movement can help create that kind of positive agency and engagement, just like an education can. And that's what I was setting out.
Yeah, you laid that out. I said, yeah, Johnny, thanks for saying we're making sure that that link to that speech is in our notes so that people can go there and just, you know, again, spend 30 minutes where you go, wow, okay, now I get it. Now I'm ready to go. Randy, too, we just, you know, we have to mention a mutual friend, Jonathan Gierko. We had him on the show.
Yes.
and Jonathan really put out, you know, here we are. We're, you know, he named the moment and say, you know, we have what we have. And is this the potential to leverage the ultimate deal maker, as he's labeled himself, President-elect Trump, and kind of said, you know, if there's an opportunity to make a deal, he's like, you know, the most skilled negotiator of our times, Randy Weingarten, is the person to do it. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about Jonathan's kind of putting you up to the task there.
Look, I think you have to do two things. Number one, you can never stray from your values. And so deal making has to happen within that context. A deal for a deal's sake is not value-based. And I think that, you know, and so within our values, I'll give you an example. If you have, take career tech ed. Career tech ed and having pathways, and I've talked on this show about this. If you have pathways from high school on, or junior high school on, for kids who say, look, I may want to go to college at one point or another, but maybe not now, or maybe I do now, but I want to have a practical skill. So what about not just AP courses, but stackable credentials and apprenticeships starting from high school? Mm-hmm. Why are we not doing that? Why 60% of the kids in America graduate from high school without going to college? Why not have these different pathways? Now, I hear from the grapevine that Linda McMahon believes in this too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if she's going to be secretary. She's going to have to get through the sexual harassment or violence or exploitation allegations that are made against her. But if she does get through it, why not work together on what Switzerland does and do it here even better? Mm-hmm. Why not do that? And if in that instance, we could work together at the very same time as we'll fight against voucherizing and defunding public schools. So if that's what Jonathan means, of course we'll do that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have to be about American opportunity for all. And we have to be about respect for all. And that's what public education and that's what labor does.
Yeah. And it's busted pencils.
I love Jonathan.
Oh, good. He loves you too, man. We could tell that. Hey, if you want to jump in and leave a question for us in the mailbag, 608-557-8577, that's the number. You can drop us a message in too. And if you have a question for Randy, we'll pass it on to her. But Randy, you know, you laid out too, and I think from public education, really pointing out three strategies,
yes.
Literacy, community schools, and relevant, or more importantly, engagement. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of lay those out for the Busted Pencils listener because of there's such a connection to public education.
So, you know, part of what I was trying to do in this speech is not make policy so far away from people and to really, and there's a saying from the scriptures. You know, my wife is a rabbi, so mm-hmm. I got to be a little spiritual here. But there's a saying from the scriptures that no one is expected to do everything, but everyone has to do something. And part of what we have to do is, I think we have to do things much more localized. It's more relevant. It's more real. And people are more engaged that way. So what I threw out was, it's not just a defense of public education, but we got to strengthen it. And so there are three things that I thought that we could do at a local level. Number one is, you know, we give out books. As others ban books, we give out books. We do it in community. We've done 400 of these events in the last 2 years. We've given out 10 million books in the last 10 years. And so if you do it as a community event in a way that parents and kids are together, it fosters the love of literacy and the love of reading. And I challenged people, let's do it more. Let's not just do 400 events in 2 years. Let's do 800 events in 2 years. Let's philanthropy help us buy books. We'll buy a million. We do it, you know, from dues money. That's about $2-3 million. Let others help us and we'll do more of these things to get books into the hands of kids. Number two, loneliness is a real thing. Johnny said it before. And there are two ways of dealing with loneliness and disaffection and disconnection. One is, let's wrap services around a school. Schools sometimes are the biggest employers in a district or in a region. Let's wrap services around. Let's make it the center of community. Let's have adult education. Let's do other types of things. Let's meet the needs of families. We got a lot of care closets and clothing closets and things like that. Let's really make this, figure out ways that really meet the needs of families through community schools. And the third is this engagement piece. Experiential learning, those of us who have taught for a long time, project-based learning, experiential learning, Dewey said it. I was just at the Barnes Museum. Think about what art is. Think about what football is. Think about what career tech ed is. We have to do more experiential learning. And you know what that does? It helps us do what the four things that kids really need right now are: critical thinking and problem solving, resilience and relationship building. So let's stop with the overtesting and let's start with really thinking about project-based and experiential learning. And career tech ed, not only is a workforce development, it's some of the best ways to do that. That's what I called for.
Nice. Man, Johnny, jump in there.
Absolutely inspired. Appreciate all the work that you do, Randy, and for sharing it with our listeners here. And you break it down at the end of your talk the other night, and you certainly touched on it here today. The simple truth is that we all do better when we all do better. Those are your words, and they resonate with me since you said them, and I'm carrying them with me because this is an exciting moment to do that work. Appreciate you joining us, Randy. Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Let me just say one more thing. In this liminal space, I agree with you, Johnny. It could be the worst of times, but in this liminal space, it might be the best of times. But we have to have, this is a race between fear and hope. And we are running on the hope side.
That's right.
And that's who we are. That's who all three of you are. So I just wish you a really wonderful holiday and the best of the new year. And let's just fight this together. And let's fight for people. And let's fight for opportunity. And let's fight for dignity for all of us.
Absolutely. And now for your moment of zen. History can untie our minds, our bodies, our disposition to move, to engage life rather than contemplating it as an outsider. It can do this by widening our view to include the silent voices of the past so that we look behind the silence of the present. Oh, well, thanks for busting pencils with us. And don't forget, every Friday, we drop a free throws and face-offs. Tune in Saturday across all the civic media stations to listen to Busted Pencils. Don't be late for homeroom on Monday. So keep busting pencils.